This is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Perek Chav Gimel of the book of Yechezkel, of Sefer Yechezkel, chapter 23. It is a long chapter, but it's not a particularly complicated chapter. The overall message is going to be that the Jews have that the Jewish people have betrayed Hashem, have been faithless to Hashem, and it's going to evoke an imagery that we probably know best from Tisha B'Av, from the keynote, the imagery of Ahala and Ahaliva, of these two sisters, these two women anyway, yeah, these two sisters, Ahala and Ahaliva, who both of whom betray Hashem. And in discussing that, Hashem will make get the message across. The Jewish people are going to be suffering and are to be blamed for their having abandoned Hashem in various ways, as we'll see. I just wanted to spend a minute, even as we begin, to think about, because this parak will take this metaphor perhaps as far as any other parak does, and go into it in depth. And I think it's worth paying some attention to the fact that the Torah, that the Tanakh, uses as a metaphor for faithlessness, uses the betrayal of wives towards their husbands. This is an issue that I also came across recently. I was talking about the Aseret Dibrot, and I noted that when the Aseret Dibrot wants to talk about a sexual impropriety, it singles out idolatry. Now, in Torah terms, in halachic terms, adultery. In halachic terms, adultery is certainly a terrible sin, but it's a terrible sin on the same level as other arayot, as other incestuous relationships that are inappropriate, unacceptable, and incur grave punishment if they are transgressed. The question would be, why would it be that the Torah would choose to single out adultery for inclusion in the Aseret HaDibrot? And one possibility, there is a Rashi in Shirashirim that says explicitly, one possibility is that if you take the line that the second five Dibrot parallel the first five Dibrot, so Loti Naf is comparable to Loti Sa Hashem Hashem Elokecha Lashav, so then it would suggest or imply that the act of adultery in human relationships is akin to abandoning someone you were supposed to have committed to and been faithful towards, and it's that act that makes it part of the Aseret Dibrot, because it parallels what people do when they reject Hashem. If you take that, if you accept that, then you can understand the imagery here as well. It's going to be that kind of an image, that if the Jewish people are seen as the wife in our relationship with Hashem, so this wife, or these wives, right, there could be multiple wives, these wives, each of whom are supposed to be faithful to Hashem, choose not to and betray it, and then the kinds of urges and the kinds of lures and seductions that would lead someone to do that, maybe there are parallels that should be drawn there as well. So I won't go into all of that because we have to read through the parak and get its basic understanding down, but it's something, an image, it's an idea, I think, worth playing with, toying with, and thinking about. The extent to which this metaphor is not just me, that's always the question of metaphor. Is it a metaphor that works in one particular way and therefore it's usable? That can happen with some metaphors. But there are other metaphors that are more broadly applicable, that more broadly capture some set of ideas, ideals, some set of reprimands that the Navi wants to make. And it might be that that's true in our case here, and that in every case of when we use sexual metaphors for the act of becoming unfaithful to Hashem. Question is it just because it's shocking and striking? Possibly. But it may be that there's something about the nature of human sexuality and the desires and urges that people lead people to stray when they're supposed to be faithful in ordinary human marital relationships that has some deep parallel to the kinds of urges that lead us also to want to betray Hashem in terms of finding other figures to worship. That would also explain, if it were true, would also explain why the arayot are part of what we call the mitzvot yehareg v'yavor. You would then have avodah zarah, gilui arayot, as a parallel to avodah zarah, and shikhut damim is also a parallel to avodah zarah in other ways, but different discussion. In case perikaf yemo vahidvar Hashem elai lemor ben adam shtayim nashim benot imachat ayu. There were two women, daughters of one mother, but tiznena b'mitzrayim bin urehen zanu shama moachushe dehen misham isu dade betulehen. So some of these images are quite graphic, and I'm not convinced that there's a deep value in my going over them in their literal senses, and therefore I think I won't. So I will say that in general what we're talking about is sexual imagery, and what we're saying is that these two women, when they were in Egypt in their days of youth, so we're talking here probably literally about the time when they were in Mitzrayim, they strayed and they prostituted themselves and they did various physical activities to as examples of their prostitution, which fits in with our tradition that when the Jews were in Egypt, and we've seen this even in the book of Yechezkel, Radakis stressed it also, that the Jews there in Egypt were betraying Hashem, and that it's not true that we held fast to our tradition of monotheism left for us by our forefathers, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and we stayed faithful to that tradition. Rather, we specifically did not stay faithful to that tradition. We failed in that task, and that's a lasting part of our legacy. So that's the memory here. So Pasuk Dalet Shmotan Ahala Hagidola. The older one is Ahala, Va'ahaliva Achota, and the sister is Ahaliva, Vatiena Liva Tilana Bani Vanot, and they became mine, and they bore a lot of children, Shmotan, Shamron, Ahala, Vishalayim, Ahaliva, and their names became that Shamron became Ahala, and Yerushalayim became Ahaliva. So in terms of these names of Ahala and Ahaliva, and Shamron, so Rashi points out in the case of Shamron, that Shamron isn't really where it started, because Shamron is built relatively late in the Malchut Yisrael, but nonetheless it's called Shamron, even though it came late. So that's Ahala comes there, and Ahaliva, I think, is taken from the idea of, right, Rashi says, Al-Shem Sha'ahali Hayava Omikdashi, the Beit HaMikdash was there, so it's called Ahaliva. Whereas Ahala, Rashi explains that, Shana Seit Ohel Mitrila. Sorry about that bell. That Rashi says that she's called Ahala because Shana Seit Ohel Mitrila Legle Yiravam. She became an Ohel for the calves. She became a tent, a home to the idol worship the calves, but the agalim, the egle zahav, the golden calves that Yeravam set up early on in Malchut Yisrael. So it's called Ahala. So pasuk hey vatizin Ahala tachtei vatahagava me'ahaveha el ashur kirovim. So Ahala turns away first, or we notice her turning away first, and she goes after and is longing for various competitors to Hashem, various lovers would be part of the image, Ashur, and what she likes about them, apparently, in Pasuk Vav, is Levushei Techilet, Pachot Uskanim, Bachorei Chemet, Kulam, Perashim, Rochavei Susim. That they have great clothing, they're clothed in Techilet, which is a beautiful color and was considered and is an expensive color, and they are governors, and they are officers of various sorts, and they have people mounted on horses, and they ride horses, and they're all handsome and good looking and attractive. Pasuk Zayin v'titen taznutel lehem yivchar b'nei Asher kulam v'chol asher agva v'chol gilulehem nitma. And so she goes after them, and she's interested in them, and she defiles herself, and everything she does after going after them, she gets defiled more and more. But taznutel mimitzayim lo azav, and never having left, or not never having left, but she didn't leave it completely, she brought it back. She remembered the Egyptians from her days of youth. Vehema Isu that David Tulandi had been the first to take her. Aleha, and they had poured out their lust upon her. So again, it's a sexual imagery, but I think the point clearly here is not that, because we're talking about matters of the spirit and matters of national mores and how they lived. And I think the point that to be properly translated into what the point that's being made is that the northern kingdom, Ahala, never managed to fully leave their fascination with Egypt. Now, there is a Dvartorset at the Haggadah that because Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, so we are freed of Egypt, and we speak about being freed not just physically, but freed culturally, and freed morally and spiritually. And the complaint, I think, that Yechezkel is registering on behalf of Hashem, that Hashem is telling Yechezkel to register, is that they didn't experience that freedom. They didn't thrive in that freedom. Rather, they turned elsewhere. And so what are the attractions? So notice what the Pesukim is saying. The attractions of Ashur are the kinds of clothing they wear, and their power, and that they're handsome, and everything looks good. And you just follow what looks good. You don't pay attention to what's true and what's real. And you don't even manage to leave behind the legacy of Egypt, which was where you grew up, where you started, which is certainly true, but you're supposed to have gone beyond that. I'll also point out that Rashi thinks that the part of the blame here is not only when it comes to Ashur, it's not even that they went after Ashur so much culturally. Rashi puts the first piece of blame when they turned to Ashur for help, when one of the kings, Menachem ben Gadi, turns to the kings of Ashur for help strengthening his hold on the throne. He points out that that act, so that's a very, that seems an innocuous act, trying to make a political alliance. But Rashi says, the Navi is midameh hadavar li'isha min ha'efet. The Yechezkel compares it to adultery, because if they worshipped Hashem properly, they wouldn't need Malchei Ashur. So the abandoning of Hashem here is seen as being an act of that adultery. Even abandoning, not in terms of abandoning as they're worshipping God as this, it's the abandoning in terms of they don't believe that Hashem is the source of their real salvation. So there are different ways in which one can make a political alliance. One can make a political alliance by saying, and this you can hear in our times, you hear people say, well, there is no other solution than doing this or this or this. So if you say that, then what you're saying is you don't believe in God, because with God in the picture, then many things are possible that wouldn't otherwise seem possible. You may say, as far as I understand the role that God has given me in the world, as far as I understand the way that at this time in history God has chosen to intervene or not to intervene, it becomes incumbent upon me to take certain political movements because that's the best way that I can understand it. It's the same thing. When Jews in the times of the Rishonim or in Eastern Europe had to go and bribe various officials to remove decrees from the Jewish people, so there are two ways one could do that. Some of the people who did that later on in Jewish history probably had no thoughts of Hashem in their minds at all, and they just said, yeah, we have to do this because that's the only way we're going to survive. But you can equally well say, Kadosh Baruch Hu has provided us this challenge and challenged us in this way. This is the best way we can see to try to work our way out of it. Barring the lack of miraculous intervention by Hashem, we'll have to do it this way. But there's a world of difference between those two, and I think that's what Rashi is suggesting was going on here with Ashur, that with, when you see the Jews turning towards Ashur for political assistance, it was an example of that godless experience, and that's what the Navi is talking about. In Pasuk Tet, Lachein etatir b'yad mi'ahaveha, so to sort of make the point and punish them for that, make them understand where they've gone wrong, Hashem says, so I gave them in the hands of their lovers, of those that they had turned to, and that's what eventually happens in the northern kingdom, that Ashur comes and conquers them and takes them away. So they had originally been the ones to expose what's wrong with her, right? Gilui Arvata. So we always use the phrase Gilui Arvata, which means to expose one's nakedness. So it's used in the Torah as a euphemism for inappropriate sexuality. But here, when it's being used, Gilui Arvata here, and as in the book of Echad, Gilui Arvata means that they revealed the embarrassing aspects of her. And in this case, the embarrassing aspect is that they turned away from Hashem and towards this human agency. And now, because of that, all of their successes, their children, the various things they had are taken away, and they are getting killed by the sword, and it became a sort of a metaphor, a common byword, a common thing known among women, meaning of the other nations, right? In this metaphor, women is a reference to the nations who would be handled by Ashur or Mitzrayim, so they came to remember that this is what happened to Ahala. Pasuk Yud Aleph, which is much more what Yechezkel is focused on now, because in Yechezkel's time, Ahala has already been gone for 150 years as a separate kingdom of its own. Now, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vatera Achutah Ahaliva. Right, so Ahaliva sees what happens, and what's supposed to occur if Ahaliva sees what happens. So the Radak says it very clearly. Even though she sees the Churban and the Galut, she still, Ahaliva, puts her trust and her faith in other nations, which is exactly the mistaken and wrong reaction that you would have expected them to learn to do otherwise. But it's not true. But Tashchit Aglata Mimena, she does even worse. Vetaznuteha Biznune Achota, she looks even further and even more assiduously. And she does even more acts of betrayal. El Bnei Ashur Agava Pachot Uskanim Krovim Levoshe Michlol Perashim Rochvei Susim Vachorei Chemin Kulam. And she turns to Ashur because they, of course, have good-looking clothing and power and are handsome. Va'era kinidma derech achad ishtehen. Pasuk Gimel, so Hashem is speaking now, and I saw how she became also tmeah. They all went the same way. Va'tosev el taznuteh, va'tera anshei mechukeh alakir tzalmei chazdim chakim v'shashar. So she goes even further, meaning Ahaliva is going to carry this abandonment of Hashem and this betrayal of Hashem and this turning towards others even further than Ahala did. And now she sees on the walls, and she sees and chooses to include on the walls Kazdim, which probably means Bavliim, and she sees their pictures there. Chagore Ezor v'matnehem Sukhei Tivulim v'Rashehem Areish Alashim Kulam Dimud B'nei Bavel Kazdim Eretz Moladam. She sees them with belts and flowing turbans on their heads, and they look like officers, like people of real elegance. So you can get a sense of. You can get a sense of what it is, or part of what it is, that's bothering Hashem and through Yechezkel so much about their searching for others. It's not even like they're searching for, they think this. So you could argue, let's say I have a certain version of the Jewish religion and I find it dry and I find it unsatisfying. So I look elsewhere and I find something satisfying. There's at least an argument to be made that I'm maintaining the sense of what a religion is all about, and I'm looking for that kind of fulfillment. But here, the kinds of things that are attracting them are completely irrelevant to the whole question of what a relationship with Hashem is supposed to be about. They're being attracted by their clothing, by their prestige, by their being handsome. None of that says anything about whether the person knows the truth about the way the universe works, which is, after all, what Hashem is all about. And yet they go for them. So pasuk ted zayin vatagiva alehem lemareh eneha vatishlach malachim eleha alehem kastima. And so she lusts after them, and she wants them, and so she sends, she being a haliva, sends messengers after them to Kazdim, trying to curry favor with them. Pasuk that was pasuk zayin. Pasuk yuzayin vayvoy ala b'dei bavel mishkav dodim vaytamu otah b'tazmutam v'titma bam v'tekan nafsha mehem. And so they respond to the call, and they come and they defile her, and she gets defiled until she gets tired of them, right? So because we don't stick with Bavel. If we had stuck with Bavel, then we never would have gotten in trouble, right? Part of the things that Tidkiyahu does is that he eventually decides he doesn't want Bavel anymore. And that's what leads them, right? And so it's, Rashi says that Yehoyakim already does it as well. That rebellion is what then is going to lead to destruction. So it's not only that the Jewish people betrayed Hashem by going to other nations, but then they abandoned that nation and they went for yet other nations by turning away from them. I would also point out that Rashi sees this pasuk Yizayin of Bnei Velma coming to her as a reference to Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu at the end of his life, or at the end of what we see of his life, is visited after he miraculously is healed from a deathly illness and beats back Ashur. King of Bavel sends messengers to him to celebrate with him and to express his good wishes upon his recovery. And Chizkiyahu ends up showing them all of the storehouses of the Beit HaMikdash and of his own palace. Yeshayahu says, what are you doing? Chizkiyahu says, oh, these are people from far away, from a land called Bavel. And Yeshayahu says, you know what? They're going to take it all with them back to Bavel because of what you did. And Chizkiyahu says, fine. So those of you who have heard the discussions in Malachim, I discussed it there somewhat. I assume that in Yeshayahu they discussed it as well. But that's what... that is what happens there, and Rashi sees this as a reference to that. I would just point out that if this is a reference to that incident, then Pasuk Ted Zayin, which says that she sent Malachim, meaning Ahaliva sends Malachim to Kastim to Bavel, would seem to imply that what we see in the Navi is that Bavel, when they heard about Yechizkiel's recovery, send messengers. But if you take this Pasuk seriously, it would seem that the initiation of the relationship or the interaction between Bavel and the Malchut Yehuda started from us rather than from them. So that's something that could be checked up. So Pasuk Yudchet, so now they're turning away from Bavel, Vatigalta Zimtea, Vatigalta Vata, so she just reveals herself inappropriately. Vatega Nafshimi Aleha, so then I, Hashem, turned away from her. Kasher Nak An Nafshimi Alakuta, as happened with Ahala. And part of the subtext here is that Ahaliva should have been learning a lesson and instead is following that path and even more so and even worse. But Tibet doesn't tell his court, Yemenu Reha, she was on Tabi Eretz Yisrael, and in doing so, she is so caught up in these acts that she's reminding us, she's reminiscent of what she had been like when she had been in Egypt. And Rashi says, not only that, but also that the memory of Egypt is what leads Tzidkiyahu then to send to Egypt for help that he thinks will help him get away from Bavel. Pasuk Chav v'Tagva al Pilak Shehem Asher Bisar Chamorim Bisaram Zirmat Susim Zirmatam, and she turns to them and she wants to become like a Pilagesh to them. So she's turning away from Bavel into Mitzrayim, and this is going to be part of her downfall. And then a pasuk that had many, many reverberations in halacha, and it's interesting that it does, So the very little meaning would be, the very little meaning would be that she turns to Mitzrayim, Asher Besar Chamarim Saran, that they were possessed of, and this would be a very physical metaphor, that the physical metaphor of, they were possessed of physical attributes that would be almost inhuman in their various sizes, because they would really be more appropriate to various kinds of animals. But the pasuk was also taken by various sources, beginning with the Gemara. At the beginning of the Gemara, it takes it seriously in terms of halachic rules that apply to various kinds of non-Jews. So, for example, Gemara Yevamos talks about that that non-Jews aren't considered to have, or Mitzrim at least, aren't considered to have, while they're not Jewish, lineage in the same way as we do. And he says, and don't think it's because I don't know, or I suspect that we don't know who their parents are, because they're so caught up in sexual immorality. It's not even true, because if you have twins, right? Even if you have twins who then convert to Judaism, they don't do chalitza, they don't do yibum. So Rava says in that Gemara, the discussion in that Gemara is for another time, but the Rava says, it shows you that afkure rachmana lazare, that the whole idea of lineage and of connection in those ways is not considered by the Torah to be fully valid when it comes to them. And quotes our pasuk, "Bzarcham Reb Saram, v'zirmat susim zirmatam," that they're the very things by which they create the next generation, right? The vehicles of reproduction are not considered to be fully human in these terms. That's what Rava says. So how we take that halacha is an interesting question. It comes up in a couple of areas. The most well known of them, I suspect. The most well-known of them, I suspect, is the claim of Rabbeinu Tam. And Rabbeinu Tam, you have to understand, even though it's going to sound very not politically correct, in Rabbeinu Tam, it's a kula. Rabbeinu Tam says he thinks that if a woman abandons her husband, literally a woman and literally a husband, and has an affair, an adulterous affair with a non-Jew, and then changes her mind, right? Changes her mind and comes back to her husband. No, that's not what happens. I'm sorry. The case was, she has this affair with a non-Jew, and the non-Jew eventually decides to convert. So the halacha really is, when a woman has an affair, she's not allowed to stay with her original husband, and she's not allowed to marry the man with whom she had an affair. She's asur labal and asur laboel. Rabbeinu Tam held in this situation that she was allowed to marry this non-Jew, because all of the sexual relations they had while she was non-Jewish, in some sense, don't count in halacha. So that's a halacha position that I don't think is generally accepted, or it comes up in various contexts. You have to follow each context and each situation carefully. But what it implies then, what it says then, is that the Gemara and Rabbeinu Tam and the Rishonim are taking this metaphor both literally and in its context in the Nevuah. So in the Nevuah, it's fairly clear. The point is to say that she's turning after non-Jewish nations who are not involved in the same kinds of things we're involved in. But the fact that Rabbeinu Tam and the Gemaras apply it to regular halakhic situations and apply it and say that it's saying that they're not like us, this is how we halakhically treat their ordinary physical experiences, shows something about metaphor in Tanakh and something about how the Navi was understanding their life, at least in comparison to ours. Meaning, you don't have to say the Navi means literally, it is Besar Chamorim. You can say, as long as you say something like, what we understand the Navi to mean is, that compared to us. So the halacha of, that a woman can't stay married to the Boel, to the man with whom she had an adulterous affair, you could say it in one of two ways. You could say it's just a punishment for had an affair on her husband, she doesn't get to stay with the person she had an affair with. Or you could say that within the Jewish people, there are various modes of conduct that halacha imposes on us and assumes from us, and that this person who's not Jewish, A, may not have the same standards, but aside from whether he has the same standards or not, that in the act of conversion, he enters into a completely different framework. And once entering that different framework, the same, what seem like similar actions back in that previous reality, no longer have the same impact and the same meaning. So something along those lines. Pasuk of Allah Vatifkidi Aidzimat Raich Basot Basot Mitzrayim Dadaich Lema'an Shidei Urayach. And so you're going back to the ways of your youth, meaning if we in Mitzrayim were acting inappropriately, the point of Yitzhak Mitzrayim and Makatan Torah and getting to Eretz Yisrael was supposed to be that we would learn to not do those kinds of things, and now Hashem is noting that in fact the Jewish people have gone back to all of those ways when she did things as a young national child with the Egyptians and with Egypt, so it's coming all coming back to her, and all those kinds of behavior are returning. Pasuk of Bet Lachin Ahaliva Komar Hashem Elokim Hilni Meir Me'ahavayach Alayich Et Asher Nak'an Afsheich Mehem Vavetim Alayich Mitzaviv. So all those who you adulterated with, who you had these relationships with, I'm going to have them turn away from you. In this, the ones you turned away from and you eventually got tired from, I'm going to bring them all around you. Bnei Bavel, v'chol chazdim, v'kod, v'shova, v'koak, obnei ashur, otam, b'chori chemet, b'chod, uzkenim, kulam, shalashim, ukurim, rochvei, susim, kulam, all of those, the horse riders, all the ones you found so attractive, all of the ones you spent time with, v'au alayich, hotzen, rechem, v'galgal, v'kalamim, and they're going to come with all the various rakes and shovels and implements of destruction and war. Sinal magen v'kovo yasim olayach saviv v'natati v'tnehem mishpat u'shfatuch b'mishpatehem. I'm going to give them, Hashem is saying, I'm going to entrust them with the task of giving you the punishment that you fully deserve. V'natati kinati bach v'asu otach b'chema apeich v'oznayich yasiru v'acharitech b'cherev tipol heima banayich v'notech yikachu v'acharitech te'achal ba'esh. And they're going to do all these terrible things to you. They are going to direct their passion, Hashem's passion. They're going to be the vehicles of it. They're going to cut off your nose and ears. They're going to kill the rest of you by the sword. They're going to take your children, and the rest, whoever's left, is going to be eaten up by the fire. They're going to take your clothing and all the things that you were so proud of. And I will finally get you to stop your various adultery and your and there's no the prostitution that you've done since Mitzrayim, and you won't do it anymore. So it's interesting, the Radak points out or argues on this pasuk that from the day that the Jews went into exile into Bavel, they no longer worshipped idols. So this interestingly connects to Chazal's tradition, or Chazal's idea somewhere in the Gemara that the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, the inclination to idol worship, was at some point killed and destroyed. And so the timing is very similar, and that's what Hashem might be saying, that part of this punishment is going to remove the connection to idol worship. I'm not sure that it lasted, because different discussion as to whether there's idol worship in the world today and if Jews are involved in it, but that's the way the Radak understands it. I'm going to put you, give you into the hands of those you hate, those you've been disgusted by. They're going to deal with you with hatred. That's part of the problem with being punished by others, meaning when Hashem punishes us, we may complain bitterly, but part of what we can be sure of is that when Hashem punishes us, the punishment always comes with the underlying relationship, the underlying love. It would be like, you know, if a parent punishes a child, or if the parent just lets a stranger punish the child, the stranger has nothing other than ordinary human kindness to stop him from punishing him even more fully than, from punishing him tremendously terribly, whereas the parents have these bonds of love. So that's what's going to happen here. They're going to leave you naked and bereft, and all of what you've done, all of these terrible nakednesses will be revealed. And all this is going to happen to you because you wandered after other nations and you searched them out and defile yourself by following their various gilulim, their various terrible things that they do, that are part of their national legacy. So in their case, it's upsetting or it's bothersome, but it's not quite as bothersome because of that situation. So pasuk lamed aleph b'derech hakotech halach. So you went in her same way, and so therefore you're going to get the same kind of a you're going to get her cup, meaning her cup of punishment, in your hands. Puzzled lamed bed, call mar Hashem Elokim kosach hotech tishti. You'll drink from her cup, hamukah v'harachava, the wide and the deep. Tiyel etzchok u'lelag merbal hachil, it's going to cause you so much terrible things. It's going to cause you people laughing at you and mocking you, and a lot of, and it's going to hold much sorrow and much times of trouble. Pasuk Lamed Gimel Shikaron VeYagon Timalei, and then you'll be filled with both drunkenness and sadness and agony. Kos Shema Ushmama Kos Achotech Shamron. It's going to be a cup of desolation and horror, and the cup that Shamron, the Shamron drank already. V'shatit ota umatzit v'etcharaseha tigaremi v'shadayech tenateki. You're going to drink it all the way through, and then you're going to charaseha tigaremi v'shadayech tenateki ki ani dibaitin im Hashem Elokim. So you're going to like chew it over. It's going to be, I think, is what the phrase probably means. You're going to, Rashi says, Kemova Asimotahem Yigareim, which Gorer Vishinav Etzvivota Etzem, you chew at the bone to get all the rest of the meat off of it. So that would mean here too, you're going to be drinking this cup and then drinking it and even chewing at the cup to try to get it the last drops. And again, this is the cup that contains desolation and sadness. So it's not a good thing. You're going to be getting the very last drop of all the possible desolation. Pasuk Lamed Hey Lachin Kol Marash Melokim Ya'an Shachachat Oti V'Tashlicha Oti Acharei Kevech. You forgot me. You threw me behind your back. V'Gamatz Izi Matech V'Ed Taznatayach. So therefore, you're going to have to bear the consequences of your actions. Pasuk Lamed Vav. Vayim Rashem Elay Ben Adam V'Tishpot Aholav Et Aholivav V'Aged Lahen Et Toavotehen. So Hashem comes back and says, you got to do it more. You have to argue with them again about all the things they've done wrong. So the fact that there's a need here would suggest, I'm not saying it says it straight out, but it would suggest that the messages have not gotten across, that Yechezkel has not, you know, the ideal, I think the ideal would be that if Yechezkel says a nevuah and you hear the nevuah, you follow what he says and you accept it. But repeatedly we find that that's not true of Nevuot, even of Nevi'im. And here too, the need that Hashem comes back and says, so argue with them again about their Toavot, means the message isn't getting across. Which would seem to imply that for all that they're doing these things that Yechezkel is saying, they're either denying it or they're denying that it's a problem. Because they have committed adultery and they have blood on their hands and they have and committed adultery with their various gilulim, meaning their idol worship was off another form of adultery. The children they have, holiduli would mean that they have born to be servants to Hashem and to be part of Hashem's nation. They have passed through fire to for like Moloch worship. And they've done more than that. They've defiled the my Bein HaMikdash by doing these forms of idol worship. So Radak says that the meaning of the pasuk is that they worshipped idols, and then on that same day they would come to Bein HaMikdash to worship Hashem. So the point is that what makes it worse about that is that's completely insensitive to the contradiction between the two. Rashi says the same thing, right? On the day that they would slaughter their children for idol worship, they would come to the Beit HaMikdash to worship, and then Rashi thinks on Ve'et Shabtotai Chilelu means that they would kill the children on Shabbos. So you're not allowed to kill on Shabbos in general, even those animals that you are allowed to kill during the week, and then this is killing them for idol worship. So it's stressing how far they've gone from understanding what they're doing wrong. So either they're doing it on purpose and they're mocking the whole thing, or they've allowed themselves to come to believe that either one of those, any one of those things can hang out together, and that it's all good as long as it's spiritual and it's part of the way you think you're worshiping God. It's all good and it's all together. So I think that idea or that model seems to me to fit much better. Otherwise, I don't understand the meaning. You have to sort of come from a frame of reference in which killing a son to some idol is some way congruent. Otherwise, it's unbelievable that they would do such a thing. And that's what Yechezkel is complaining about. They worship idols on Shabbos when they're not supposed to be doing the acts of idol worship, even if those acts were permitted for some other reason. And then that same day, they would go to the Beit HaMikdash.
ובשחתם את בניהם לגבריהם ויבואו על מקדשי ביום ההוא לחללו ונכו עשו בתוך ביתי. That's what they're doing. They're doing exactly that. פסוק מם, ואף כי תשלחנו לאנשים באים במרחק אשר מלאך שלוח עליהם ונבל לאשר רחץ כחלת עינייך ועדית עדי. And also, they send for people to come from afar, from people, they send messages like trying to get people, lure people to come and join them, and then the metaphor of adultery coming back, or of at least sexuality coming back, they clean themselves, they put on makeup, and they put on jewelry, v'yashavta mitach vuda, and you sit on a nice bed, v'shulchan aruch lefaneh, and you set the table, uktarti v'shamni samt aleha. And then you put my incense and the oil in these places, meaning they're using vehicles of Hashem's worship in order to lure people into these kinds of things. Pasuk mem bet v'chol hamon shalev bach v'el anashim erov adam muvaim savaim v'ribay v'aitnut midim al yedehen v'ateritiv eret al rashehen. And so, and a lot of people are doing this, right? There's a whole long crowd al haliva is producing a crowd of people who want to worship and who are enjoying the worship. And there were so many of them, they would go out to, they might even go out to open places to do it, and they're trying to make themselves beautiful in the eyes of those who are trying to attract to join them. So in other words, the idea is they're trying to become, in our days, it would be the kind of thing where you try to become popular, you try to succeed by getting a lot of people to join you and to create a good business of it. So that's what's going on here. They're trying to become the popular form of idol worship. Pasuk mem gimel va'omar la bala niufim atayiz nutaz nuteha vahi. So Hashem said, I'm going to destroy this. La bala niufim. Let all the adultery get destroyed, and they'll do their fornication that you do this, but it's going to end up bad. Pasuk mem dalad vayavo eleha kevol isha zona kinbo el ahala ve'el ha'iva. And when the non-Jewish nations come to them, Hashem points out, they do it like you go to an Isha Zonah. So you don't go to an Isha Zonah for any kind of a lasting relationship. You go to an Isha Zonah for a temporary, a very quick interlude. And that's what they're doing here too. Rather than what Ohala and Ohaliva thought they were doing, which was getting these non-Jews to really like them and to really want to be part of their lives, and the righteous among these people, meaning the judges of these other nations, are going to judge you. They will judge you as the adulterers you are, meaning the faithless ones that you are, and the murderers. And because they are adulterers and they have blood on their hands. So there's interesting on this last pasuk, just the last. I think there's a Gemara in Nedarim, Tzadi Aleph Amud Bet, where the Gemara talks about a case where a guy was about to commit literal adultery, and then something happens and he has to hide. And when he and in the process, he sees some food that has been eaten by a snake, which would have deposited its venom in it. And the woman's husband then comes home while he's still hiding there, and he comes out and he warns the husband not to eat from it because the snake had eaten from it, and therefore he shouldn't eat from it. So the Gemara says you can conclude from that they didn't actually committed the adultery yet. From our pasuk, what our pasuk says, those who commit adultery are willing to commit murder as well. So the fact that this man decided to save the life of the husband, it shows he hadn't yet committed adultery. There's all the discussion of it that's around, and I am certainly over my time for today, but I find it an interesting idea that it's suggesting that sins are in fact joined in some sense of in some way, and that the ability to commit adultery is a very strong gateway, a very strong indicator that one might be on the road to being willing to commit murder. Pasuk mem vav, gicho amar Hashem Elokim ha'ale aleihem kahal v'naton etem l'za'ava v'lavaz. So Hashem says, I'm going to bring a group, a kahal, against them, and they're going to become l'za'ava v'lavaz. They're going to become disgraced, and everybody's going to look at them and look down on them. Right, and that's what's going to happen to them. Ragmu alehen even gahal uvareotan b'charvotam, and they're going to punish them. We're going to pelt them with stones, cut them down with swords. Benehem uvnotehem yahrogu, they're going to kill their children. Uvatehen vayishisrofu, they're going to burn their houses. V'hishbati zimam min haaretz, and then Hashem says, "I will cease, or I will make stop. I will finally put an end to the zima in the land, the improprieties in the land. By improprieties here, we clearly mean both the physical ones of actual sexual problems, in addition to the broader version of zima, much like we saw before, the tum'ah can mean the technical tum'ah of contact with a corpse, but then it can also mean the tum'ah of inappropriate sexuality, and it can mean the tum'ah of avodah zarah, the redakat that's here too. The zima that Hashem is stopping will clearly be of those different kinds. V'nivasru kol anashim lo ta'asena kezimat chena. And all of the women will then be properly chastised, and they will no longer do like what Ahala and Ahliva does. Now, interestingly, again, bringing us back to this realization, the metaphor is meant both literally and metaphorically. The Mishnah in Sota says that when you take a woman to do the various Sota ceremonies with her, so you insist on making sure that all of the women around come and watch. And the point is to learn a lesson from it. So here too, Hashem seems to be predicting that what happens to us is going to be an object lesson, as they say, is going to actually teach to those around us not to do like we did. And they're going to put it on us, and they're going to punish us for it. And when this happens, what's supposed to happen is what our reaction is supposed to be to understand and to learn from this, that Hashem Elokim is the one who is bringing this upon us for our abandonments of Hashem in the various ways that we have done so. So, once again, it's a sad section of the book of Yechezkel, and it's a sad task to have to make these points over and over again. But as I've said before, and I'm trying to say it enough times that it actually will stick, you have to say some things 10 times to make sure that they get heard one time. Yechezkel 2 is being told by Hashem in his Nevuot, in this section of his Nevuot, comes back again and again to these basic ideas to try to get the point home to us that abandoning Hashem for other nations and other gods and other forms of worship and other cultural attachments is metaphorically and perhaps in some deeper sense really a way of committing adultery, a way of abandoning Hashem. Have a great day.